The following Dharma talk was given by Lawrence Greco at the Interdependence Project in New York City in August of 2013. For more information, please visit www.openskyzen.com.
There's a quote from a very famous person who I think is a nice way to begin tonight. I wonder if you can guess who it is. If you want the rainbow, you've got to put up with the rain. Has anyone heard that before? You've heard it? Does anyone know who might have said that? What wise teacher?
Judy Garland.
No. No. But not too far off, I guess. John Waters? No.
These are all great.
I call him often, but that's not a John Waters quote. It was Dolly Parton.
Lama Lama Dolly Parton.
Yeah, I was talking with my teacher today. Once a week we have our check-in interview thing via Skype because he lives in Missouri now, Kansas City. And he often will just say, it's all good. No matter what's going on, even through some really rough times he's had, because he's had some pretty rough times. And he always says, in the midst of it all, it's all good. Even when I know things are not all good, things are difficult. He has a habit of saying that, and I always see it as his way of teaching us something. So today I brought that up to him. I said, you always say it's all good. And he told me how many years ago, he was a student of Zen Master Sung Sam's for many years. Our lineage is based on his teachings. And Sung Sam would often say, not good, not bad. People would say, how are you doing today? I said, not good, not bad. How'd you like the movie? Not good, not bad. Yeah. And he had a lot of health problems for many years, but he would always just, I'm not good, I'm not bad. And he was Korean born, and he had a wonderful personality and a great thick accent. So one day, my teacher was out with Sung San and a bunch of monks and Dharma teachers at a restaurant that served Sung San's favorite little delicacy or Korean meal called kimchi. Very spicy, it's really good stuff. So my teacher watched Sung San take the kimchi, and with his chopsticks, he just kind of wolfed it down. He devoured it. He was clearly really enjoying it. And my teacher said, Zen Master, I thought we're not supposed to like or want anything. You seem to love that kimchi, but we're not supposed to desire anything over supper. So he put the kimchi down, and he said, I never said that. He said, I never taught you that once. My teacher said, well, you're always saying not good, not bad. So he used that. All of them were silent and watching. And he said, I'm teaching you that if someone has kimchi and it's really good and I eat it and I like it, that's wonderful. Or if they don't have kimchi and I can't have it that day, that's wonderful too. Or if they serve me really bad kimchi, I say, wonderful. We say that a lot. It's wonderful. Voice I can't emulate. So he would say wonderful to everything. Once he even took them out, they were planning a formal anniversary event at one of the Zen centers he opened. He opened over 100 all over the world. And he had all the students, 20 years ago, go outside, and it was raining out, but he had them do all the gardening and raking leaves in the rain. Just to teach them. And then he went out with them in his formal gray robes and everything. And he stood there with them all, and he got soaked. And his only teaching that day was he stood there for half an hour, and he put his hands out, feeling the rain, and he looked at them, and he said, wonderful! And they went back inside. So his whole teaching, a lot of his teaching, was about, we all have our preferences. We have our likes and dislikes. So those alone don't cause suffering or problems. It's our relationship to our desires or preferences. And if our desires and preferences become mandatory requirements for happiness, then we're running down slippery slope. Then we're in trouble. If my preferences have me around the neck like on a dog leash, that's not good. So But my teacher years ago, he was mistaking what we know about desire and how it causes our dissatisfaction and unease in life. He thought that in and of itself was the cause of his suffering. And his teacher said, no, you can have your desires. It's how you relate to them that determines if you suffer. When I first started practicing, I thought, oh boy, I have to kind of relinquish all my desires or not even want anything. This is going to be tough, but I think I can do it. So I tried going down that road for a while, but I realized that's not the point at all. And I'm not sure, as long as we're in these human bodies, that it's even possible. That it's even normal. But we have these bodies with these senses. We have eyes that see things and noses that smell things, ears that hear things, skin that can feel things. So we're going to have reactions to them. The old poem called the Theragatha, I love it. It says, if your mind becomes firm like a rock and no longer shakes, in a world where everything is shaking, your mind will be your greatest friend and suffering will not come your way. That's the point of our practice, is how do we cultivate a mind that can be still no matter what's going on around me? Like the eye of a hurricane. In every huge storm, right in the center of it all, is this windless, still, and steady place. And that's what we could develop. At least some version of that. So that no matter what's going on around me, I don't have to get swept up in it all the time. I don't have to be jerked around by circumstances and events and conditions that are constantly changing. None of us have to. That's why we practice. That's what we could aspire to. And I don't think we ever get it done perfectly, right? I don't think I'm ever perfectly immune to external conditions. But I do think over time we see a difference in how we relate to what's pleasing and what's unpleasing in our lives. In the Sakapana Sutta, it's like a conversation between the Buddha and one of his students. And it starts by this guy, I think his name is Saka or something, if you remember that one. And he's like, so Buddha, why is there so much avarice and greed and jealousy in this world? And the Buddha goes down with a list of what he thinks are the causes and which one leads to the next. But the one underneath it all was, he says, elaborated perceptions and notions are what cause our discontent. Elaborated perceptions and notions, which really just means our ideas about life versus life as it is. That's all. So we're always looking at life through conceptual colored glasses. And then we don't see clearly. And if we don't see clearly, so we're misrelating to what's going on, and therefore misperceiving the situation and then misbehaving. We're not responding to life properly. Because we're seeing it through the prism of, like you were mentioning before, like when you put gels over light, like in theater. There's always some hue we're working with. And that obscures things. So developing equanimity really fortifies all the other ones we've been talking about for the past 4 weeks. So if I develop the ability to accept things as they are, it doesn't mean complacency or apathy, but a clarity about things as they are, then I'm in a better position to change things when appropriate, if needed. Then I know how to respond to my friend who's crying or hurting. Then I know what to do in every moment before me without having to think about it. There's no thinking involved. Then compassionate and loving action arises naturally. Then it's easy to have joy for others when something good happens to them. To not feel separate and to not feel like there's a finite amount of happiness in this world that I'd better grab before someone else gets it. So this one is huge, and I think it's because it's the fourth one, I think it kind of gets ignored, like, oh, equanimity, that sounds boring. Probably means just not caring about anything. That's not at all what it means. It means seeing things very clearly as they are and not getting swept away by them. Seeing the bigger picture. Yeah, before, after we were done practicing, I introduced bowing as a practice of exemplifying equanimity. I think in our culture, when bowing can seem very off-putting to some of us because it almost suggests maybe I'm subservient to someone else and I'm bowing to them, right? Or am I worshiping some kind of higher god or something, which a lot of us don't go for. And I always look at bowing as just this very wonderful practice of relating to this moment directly and clearly. Just bowing to things as they are. Dropping my ideas about things, dropping my concepts, and seeing this life with a directness and an intimacy that it deserves. That's where happiness lies. That's where clarity lies. Not by my ideas about things. I doubt you all.